Alzheimer's and dementia impact about 6 million families in the United States alone. By 2050, that number will double. How do we turn this from crisis to care? Today, we learn more about Alzheimer's and dementia. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. I'm Russ, and this week we're continuing our three-part series on aging. Last time, we spoke about life expectancy. Next time, on our third episode, we'll discuss personal finances in regards to aging and retirement. But on this episode, we are talking about something that impacts millions of families. Our topic today is Alzheimer's and dementia. But instead of focusing on the medical treatment, so we're going to focus on the impact to those that are suffering and the families and the caregivers. When I asked my guest today how she wanted to be introduced, she told me to say that she's a daughter. Well, we'll hear more about why she said that later in the podcast. But I also have to say that she's a person that is trying to change the way that we look at dementia care. To take it from crisis to care. She founded AlzheimerSpeaks.com, and she's also the co-founder of Dementia Map, as well as a fellow podcaster. Lori LeBay, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me, Russ.
I feel like one of the problems with Alzheimer's, and maybe this is why you started these resources, is I feel like, first of all, there's not enough information out there. The first question here is, what inspired you? Was it the lack of information, or what was the inspiration for starting these resources?
Well, one, I thought there had to be other people like our family dealing with this and like, where are they? They got to be here someplace. And two, was the lack of resources that were given. Typically, organizations would only give out their information. And I thought there's got to be more stuff out there. And so I just started digging and thought, you know, I want to raise everyone's voice around the world. I want to shift dementia care from crisis to comfort. I want to get people comfortable having a conversation, because we can't, you know, we can't make sustainable change if we're not inclusive of everybody at every level.
I like that you're telling stories about people, and you're talking to not just the caregivers, but those that are suffering from this disease.
Well, you know, my mom lived with dementia for 30 years. So she started having symptoms at 55. She was misdiagnosed for 10 years. The doctor told her that she it was just her hormones. And she would say, this ain't my girlfriend's hormones. You know, we talk about this stuff, and she wasn't taken seriously. And sad to say, that still exists today, where doctors aren't educated. The majority of them aren't. This is a fairly new disease. It's been around 100 years, but few people have really talked about it, let alone gotten educated, let alone our medical profession. It's very complicated. And, you know, most dementias were told to be Alzheimer's. That was the most common. But there's a lot of different forms, just like there are many different forms of cancer. And people get confused even with what is Alzheimer's versus dementia. And, you know, I wanted to clarify that for people. Open some doors.
What is the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia?
Well, Alzheimer's is actually a disease, and dementia is not. Dementia is a set of symptoms. So like cancer isn't a disease. It's a category. And underneath that umbrella, you know, of cancer is, you know, breast cancer and colon cancer. And I mean, the list goes on and on. So dementia is like an umbrella. And then there's all these little spokes. And the most common is Alzheimer's, which people, you know, just assume that you lose your memory. But there's executive function and planning and problems. There's all kinds of different problems. There's Lewy body, where people have hallucinations and delusions. There's Parkinsonian disease, you know, where people lock up and, you know, they can't move. And then they can have dementia on top of that. There's vascular, that people get from maybe smoking or not eating properly. You know, so there's lots of different types out there. And it makes a huge difference in terms of how you're treating it. And so, for example, some people will get what they call mild cognitive impairment. And that is a kind of a precursor that you may or may not get another form of dementia. and no one really knows it, but a lot of them move on to an Alzheimer's. But even when they get, you know, diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it might later on turn into Lewy body. When they did my mom's autopsy, we were told we were dealing with Alzheimer's, and it showed primarily Alzheimer's, but it also showed signs of Lewy body and Parkinson. Mm-hmm. And so there's so much that they don't know about this disease. And so many of the symptoms, you know, look like other things. Like depression is real normal. If all of a sudden you're getting forgetful or you're not able to do something you used to do all the time, you might not share that with anybody, but it might change your personality and how you interact, because you're going to protect yourself because you don't want to be found out.
That's interesting right there, that statement. I kind of want to touch on that a little more. You don't want to be found out. There's a bit of a, I won't say it's a stigma around this. I would say there's a bit of a fear or anger that you've got this and you're realizing that your whole life is about to change. You can't, at some point, you won't be able to function in the way that you were the day before.
Yep.
Yeah. I'd love to dig in a little more on that.
Well, first I would say there's a stigma attached to it. And that's why there's a lot of fear, because a lot of times when people get diagnosed, they don't want to tell their friends, their coworkers, their family, because they look at them different. They treat them different. In some cases, it's almost like a divorce or a death where people kind of pick sides, or they're so uncomfortable that they don't want to be around it because they don't know what to do. And so it's a very strange, there's a saying out there, when you meet one person with dementia, you meet one. But, you know, we have been programmed for so many years by fear and loss. And so people picture Alzheimer's disease or any form of dementia as somebody in a wheelchair who's drooling, who can't communicate anymore. And there are people who are still driving, who are still working, who are still active. And, you know, I deal with many who have found new purpose in their life by becoming an advocate and teaching others to do the same.
The thing about that, too, is you think about, you know, Michael J. Fox with Parkinson at such an early age. When you think about this, the first thought is what you just said, where it's, you're thinking of an older person, but it's not even always that, right? With Alzheimer's and with dementia, like there's no like, oh, it's just for 70-year-olds, or it's just for, you know, an aging population.
Pitched. That's kind of how it was pitched initially. And there are, you know, many people over 65, but I can't even count how many people I know that started having issues in their 30s. Didn't get diagnosed till 40, because again, the doctors are like, well, I can't, you know, they don't even think about dementia at that age. There's children, not a lot of them, but there are children that have dementia as well.
So according to the Alzheimer's website, there's about 6 million people right now with Alzheimer's. Now, in the next 30 years, by 2050, they expect that number to more than double.
Yeah. And those are just who we know. There's a lot of people that refuse to go to the doctor because they don't want this diagnosis. You know, they don't want to lose their job. They don't want to lose their friends. They don't have anyone who's going to care for them. You know, some are just in denial, but others, you know, have different reasons for this. And so we have to get this conversation out there. You know, there's no magic bullet, but one of the best things that I found with my mom, and you know, I've been with Alzheimer's Speaks now since 2009 when I started it. And I am a firm believer, and I don't think there's a scientist in the world who can change my mind on this, but I think social interaction is critical. And I can't tell you how many people having dementia who have become advocates, who are socially connected and helping others. Like there's a group called Dementia Mentors. So let's say you got diagnosed, you could actually sign up, you know, go to their website, sign up and say, I want a mentor. And your mentor will be somebody with dementia, because they know what it looks like and what it feels like for people to look at you different, to get that diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they lift them up, they get them connected. And, you know, they say over and over and over again how empowered they feel. And it, you know, when they're busy and feeling purposeful, their symptoms kind of slide to the side. Now, not that can't take a lot out of them, as well. And right. so their downtime can really be significantly down when they're really pulled. Because, I mean, just for any of us, if we are put in a room and we're uncomfortable and we're a little antsy, we know that feeling and we know what's going on in our body and our mind and how much work that is just to maybe stay there when we don't want to be there or whatever it might be. Right. That's how they feel all day long. Mm-hmm. And so when they find purpose, it kind of pushes that to the side. And, you know, they see the value and they want the disease to have some meaning. You know, it's kind of like, if it's going to happen to me, I at least want to make it better for the next guy. I don't want to just go down by this disease alone without a fight or without trying to help figure things out.
And seeing relatives go through this and just knowing that they know as the person seeing this, it's awful. And we'll get into, you know, caregivers and whatnot in a minute, but let's, you know, in focusing on this, it's like, I kept thinking, it's like, they know what's going on inside their head at this point. Like they know that either, you know, with like Lewy body, they know that they're having these kind of weird, you know, hallucinations and they're coming out of it and like, oh, wow, what is happening to me? I just can't imagine being trapped in that.
Well, it's a very uncomfortable. I mean, a lot of people don't know that some people's delusions and hallucinations are so severe, they don't sleep with their partner anymore because they're worried they're going to kill them during the night.
Right.
Because a lot of times their dreams and visions are very violent. You know, a lot of people don't understand that somebody with Lewy body can be totally on track maybe for, you know, 3 days or a week, and then they're just out of sorts, you know, mm-hmm. for 3 days to a week. And it comes and it goes. And it's not like, okay, I'm going to put down on Friday, I'm not going to be doing so hot. It doesn't work like that. You can't schedule it. It just happens. And so, you know, people might be interested in watching on YouTube if they go to the Alzheimer Speaks channel and go to one of the playlists, which is called Dementia Chats. And that's where I actually facilitate a conversation of people with dementia. And people are shocked because they're so articulate. And, you know, they tell their stories and they talk about how they adapt and what works for them or what hasn't worked for them or how a care partner, you know, might be better off trying this instead of doing it this way, what they'd like to see our country and our community do as well. They never complain without coming up with ways to adapt. It's amazing. Hmm. They're so insightful.
Is there anything kind of, you know, on the horizon that, you know, you see out there that doctors are working on to try to help with this?
Well, you know, there's all kinds of clinical trials and they're, you know, they just announced not too long ago about the new drug that was approved and, you know, it's $56,000 a treatment. That's not a year. Wow. That's a treatment. And, you know, there's so much distrust now over how that all happened because the panel of experts said, no, it's not ready. And it got overridden. And they're saying this drug could, you know, bankrupt us to boot here in the U.S. So, you know, there's a lot of distrust over what is actually going on. There's a lot of cool studies that continue in all different paths. For me, I'm most interested in a lot of like the social engagement type things and how we can change our lifestyle to help. I mean, you know, it was probably 2 years ago. They finally came out and said, sleep's important, you know, and Rudy Tanzi, who's just a wonderful neurologist known around the world. And he said, you know, I used to pride myself on being a multitasker and not getting much sleep. And he's like, I get at least 8 hours of sleep now. You know, it's important for our brain to rest and it kind of cleans out the junk and rejuvenates. And so a lot of times as the disease progresses, two people say, boy, they're sleeping a lot. And it's like, but they're listening to their body, you know, to get that sleep that they need. Or it could be that they don't sleep they sleep during the day, but they're up all night. You know, a lot of times their circadian rhythms will change. And so you have to work with with where they're at.
Lori, I want to talk also about caregivers and caregiver depression, the toll that this takes on the caregivers. But we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. If you enjoy history, maybe you're just feeling a little nostalgic, or you wonder who's having a birthday today, or maybe you need a reason to celebrate. Well, we've got the perfect podcast for you. It is called This Is Today. And each and every day, we talk about the historic events, celebrity birthdays. We also talk about whatever is going on today. There's always something to celebrate when you listen to This Is Today. And at just 10 minutes each day, you can make it a daily habit. You can even add it to your Alexa Flash briefing. Click the link in the description or just search in your favorite podcast app for This Is Today. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We're continuing our three-part series on aging here. We're talking with Lori LeBay about Alzheimer's and dementia. I touched on the caregivers a bit here just before the break, and I want to dig into that a little bit because one of the things that I've read a lot about is caregiver depression.
Well, I think you're right. There's a lot of depression. There's a lot of angst. People get isolated. You know, they get shut in, they can't go out. I did it myself. You know, I was too busy to think about myself, to think about my friends. I looked at that as being selfish until one day my girlfriends kept bugging me every week, come for coffee. And and so one day I said I would. And I said I would on a really bad day. And the only reason I was going to go was to get them off my back once and for all. Just stop asking me to do something else. I don't have time. And we ended up laughing and crying for 2 hours. And it was in that period when I realized how depleted my soul was and how empty I was and how much I needed my friends. And so that's a big myth that we have to change. People have to stay full and engaged because you can give better care when you feel, you know, emotionally and psychologically and physically better. I mean, it only makes sense.
Right. Yeah. We had, I had somebody tell me at one point, they're like, you know, think about it like the airplane. You know, you put your mask on first. You got to take care of yourself before you're being that caregiver. Make sure that, you know, you're taken care of. You're still doing, you know, the regular things that you do as much as you can. And you shouldn't feel bad about, you know, some other family activity or some other, you know, thing that you have to do. But it's tough. It's tough to walk away, like your coffee shop visit. I mean, I'm sure it was tough for you to just walk away. But
well, I didn't. I made
you
a
have to.
I made a commitment after meeting them for 2 hours, and I said I would not miss these 2 hours because they filled me up so much.
Yeah.
Again, I didn't realize how empty I was, and for me to have that kind of attitude of I'm just going to go and tell them to knock it off. I mean, that is so. That is so not me, you know, in and of itself. I should have known that driving there, like, Lori, something's wrong with you, you know.
Right.
But I was too busy being worried about everyone else. And so, you know, it's really important. It's really important for caregivers, care partners, care companions, whatever you want to call them, to also use the word no. A lot of times what I find is people who care for another get in this role where everyone goes, gosh, they're really doing a good job. I bet they could help me too. And so everybody starts getting drawn to this person and this person doesn't say no. And they keep taking more and more on. And so, you know, for myself, I had an epiphany one night and I learned the difference between being a caregiver and being an enabler. And when I looked at everybody coming to me, I mean, my parents, I loved caring for them. I would do that a zillion times over. My mom with dementia, my dad with brain cancer. But I looked at so many others going, I am taking their burden. I am fixing it. I'm handing them back a clean slate. And then they go out and mess it up again and then go, hey, Lori. And then, you know, I'm writing a check or I'm putting in all this time. I'm doing whatever needed to be done. And, you know, this one night I just realized I am putting more effort in on their life than they are. And that was a big no factor for me. And it was a lonely time, because when you say no, people, you find out who your true friends are, why they are really around you.
Right.
So
right.
A lot of people left me that I thought I was really close to, but I wasn't of use to them anymore. And so they left, and it was like, well, this is kind of sad. But then, you know, when you clear space, other people come in that are much better matched, that are more aligned with you. And no has been a very healthy word for me.
You know, so we did a little talk in the pre-interview, and I said, you know, let's direct this, because we have a limited amount of time to talk about this. And again, you know, for more information on this, you want to, you know, visit the website, the podcast, they're all linked in the description. But when I asked you what we should talk about, and you said hope and joy, and I would love to get into that a little bit. How do we bring hope and joy into this really difficult topic?
Well, we like I said earlier, we've been trained to be scared of this disease. We've been trained to give over our relationships to the disease and be told there's nothing we can do. And I'm a firm believer we all have the power of one. So it's really easy to go down the drain and just think about all the things that you've lost, all the things that can't happen that you planned on happening. You know, your life was looking very differently until dementia knocked on your door. And it's really easy to get depressed and to feel really sad, or when they pass, just have this great big hole. But what I tell people is, you know, you can't have those tears and that great loss without first having great love. And what you're missing is that connection of great love. But how lucky were you to have that so deeply in the first place that you're missing it this much? And so for me, that helped pull me out of the hole, because I know there's a lot of people that never had that kind of relationship with somebody before. And then there's the fear. And so if you go, and I'll pick on the 36-hour day book, people will pick that up and go, oh my gosh, all of this stuff can happen to us, you know, and it's just like one behavior thing after another, and your head just starts spinning. And then most people start planning to, how do we avoid this? How do we control this? Bottom line, we really can't. We can adapt to it and we can make change. But if we are so scared that all of a sudden we're focusing all of our energy on planning for the future, what happens is, you know, we're either stuck in the future, we're stuck in the past, and then we're missing out on the present moment. And the present moment is the only place where you can create joy or identify that it's happening. And so it's up to each of us to decide, what do we want in life? Because we will find what we're looking for. If we want to feel guilty and sad, it's all there. If we want to be frightened, oh, there's plenty enough things to scare the bejesus out of us in this day and age, way over and above dementia. But if we want to find joy, it's there. It might look really different, but it's there. You know, I used to meet with a friend of my mom's once a month, and she could never go visit her in the nursing home. Just was something she couldn't do. And one day a friend decided that they were going to gift me with a video and a musician singing to my mom. And I was so proud of it, because my mom, you know, she would sleep a lot, but they would play the music and she would come alive. And it might not be, you know, she didn't last a whole hour. I think she lasted a half an hour, and she'd fall asleep and then she'd wake back up again. And as I was meeting with this friend, she's like 76 years old, and we're sliding into this booth in a restaurant. I slide this picture of my mom on the cover of this DVD. And this woman screams out in the middle of the restaurant, oh my gosh, I thought you were taking good care of her. She looks horrible, Lori. I'm so disgusted in you. And, you know, I got that nervous giggle of, what do I do now? She's screaming in the restaurant. Everyone thinks I'm just a jerk and a half. And then I just got quiet and I said, thank you. And she starts screaming at me, thank you. What are you thanking me for? And I said, Kay, because up until right now, I didn't realize I don't see what you see. You see this picture with my mom's hair not perfect. You see her teeth that used to be wonderful pearly whites that now look like a rusted chainsaw with fried rice hanging off them. You see the billy goat hair on her chin. You are seeing all the deficits. And she's like, excuse my language, but she said, well, what the hell do you see? Because that's the picture. And I said, what I see is my mom's big smile. What I see are my mom's dimples, her squinty eyes, but you can still see the glint. I said, when I look at this picture, I see pure joy. And she just went silent. But understanding, what does the person you're caring for, what brings them joy? Does it really make any difference what they look like? Just kind of like when a lot of times people are caring for somebody and they're like, get in the shower. You got to do it this morning. Is it really going to hurt you if they want to take a shower in the afternoon or the evening? But no, you push and you push and you push. And we all do this until we learn differently. And it wrecks both our days. Or maybe they don't want to take a shower and they just want to stay in their jammies. Look at yourself and go, how many times do you like to do that? Just be comfortable. Is that so bad? But we get in these hard and fast routines of what life is supposed to look at. And joy shouldn't be about how we look. It should be about how we feel. And so to me, we have to shift. And I take the word caregiving and I break it down to CAR and E-giver. CAR stands for conscious awakening of relationships. And E-givers is about being an emotional giver. What makes them happy? What makes them peaceful? Because when they're peaceful and they're happy, it's much easier for us to be peaceful and happy. But sometimes we just ignore that and we keep going on with our lists. It's kind of like a woman with a newborn. The doctor will say, when the baby sleeps, you sleep. You need your rest. And, you know, most moms don't follow that. And they're like, oh, I'm exhausted. You know, so it's like learning the ropes and really taking it to heart.
I wish we could continue on this topic and you know, talk more about this. For those listening that wish there was more to this podcast, you definitely have to go check out Lori's podcast. Can you tell us a little about your podcast?
Sure. I typically do shows on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I interview people all around the world at all different levels. So I've had young kids on the show. I've had well-known researchers on the show, doctors, neurologists. And then, of course, we have people living with the disease. Those both diagnosed and those that care for them, as well as a variety of business professionals that provide different services, products, and tools. And, you know, it's just such an honor to hear what all is available. And I think that's one of the big myths out there is there's no help. And that stems from people going to the doctor. And when they go to the doctor, they get another appointment, they get a medication. And most on their way out aren't even given the Alzheimer's Association or the Alzheimer's Foundation or several others that are out there. They're told, get your affairs in order. And so they walk out on a pretty low note. And the doctors, you know, don't really have a lot of empathy. I mean, just by giving somebody something even like Alzheimer's Speaks or Dementia Map, where they could go find some different services, would give people hope and at least a little bit more control and spur them on that, man, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, we have one kid who was a Boy Scout. He raised $10,000 and he made a freshwater fish tank from scratch. He was mentored by a man who was living in a senior living community and he gave it away to a community. Because his grandma was in a memory care and he loved freshwater fish. So he matched those. I mean, there's college girls that are playing tag football, raising funds. There are, there's so many people, prayer shawls, all kinds of things. So take your passion and do something with it. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't make a difference. You can.
And you've made such a difference with your two websites. We're going to link those in the description of the podcast. Lori, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us learn more about Alzheimer's and dementia.
Oh, well, thank you. It's such an honor. I could talk to you all day long. You know me.
And speaking of that, we're also going to link over to your podcast where you can hear more from Lori. Okay, we are in the middle of a three-part series on aging. And during the last two parts here, we've talked a lot about finances. So next week, we're going to pick up that topic and learn more about finances as far as aging and retirement. How much do you need to retire? When can you retire? When do you need to start thinking about retirement? All of those questions will be answered by a person that has done 20 years of research on the topic. We're going to do that next week here on Learning More. And then we're going to start yet another series, which we'll tell you about next week. Oh, hey, if you're looking for another podcast to check out, you might want to check out This Is Today. It's a daily podcast. Yeah, it's like every single day. Well, weekday. But anyway, we talk about the stories of each day, including national events, daily history, and some fun stories. This Is Today is available wherever you get your podcasts. There's also a link in this podcast description. Oh, by the way, all of those show notes are also available on the website for Learning More. It's a brand new, redesigned, it looks beautiful, I think, learningmorepodcast.com. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.